This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sir, one final question. What do you want to say to Americans who didn't support you in this campaign?
I'm going to treat you every bit as well as I have treated the greatest MAGA supporters. There's never been anything like MAGA in the history of this country. These people are so dedicated to making America great again. It's very simple. And I'm going to treat them just the same as I treat MAGA. We're going to treat everybody good. We want success for our country. We want safety for our country.
I can't hear myself. There we are. Okay.
There we are.
Was I not on?
You weren't, but so you're here.
Should I just start over?
Good morning. Afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Ah, you even messed that up.
Turn Ryan's mic off. happy Monday. That's a wild way to start. Listening to President Trump there talk about what he's going to do upon taking office in, I haven't checked because there's been a weekend to factor in, 42 days until Donald Trump once again is the president of the United States. And he sat down with I watched the whole thing, and it's what. I've got my phone up here. An hour and 16 minutes and 28 seconds on the video that I watched online. And I watched the whole thing, the whole conversation with Kristen Welker. And I love everything that I saw because Donald Trump was completely and totally, I would say, consistent in what he is presenting as answers to questions. Kristen Welker, actually, I would say, did a pretty decent job. She asked some very predictable questions throughout the course of that interview. And Donald Trump stuck to his guns, and he gave the answers that you... he didn't retract it. It's not like, okay, I got elected, now I can tell you the real truth. He stayed consistent and resolute on the things that he think matter to him as the man who ran for your vote and won the popular vote, the electoral vote, every single swing state. Donald Trump was very much so well presented in this conversation with Kristen Welker. Welcome back to the Andy Fry Show. Happy Monday. I appreciate you being with us this afternoon. There is some news afoot in the last hour or so, and this is a huge deal out of New York this morning in the Daniel Penny case.
The jury has reached a unanimous verdict in the case of Daniel Penny. He's been found not guilty on the charge of criminally negligent homicide. Now, remember what was at stake here. The jury could not agree on manslaughter. They failed to agree twice. The judge gave them another bite at the apple on this lesser charge, negligent. They now say not guilty.
How interesting that the manslaughter charge, that they couldn't come to an agreement on that, but they're also like, but he's also definitely not criminally negligent. Seems kind of interesting to me. We'll wait and see what Alvin Bragg does in that area. There's discussion as to whether or not he could retry the case, because with the initial charge, the higher charge, not coming to a conclusion with a guilty or not guilty verdict, there is discussion as to whether or not that case, that prosecution, has been closed. I was listening to Jonathan Turley earlier this morning on Fox News, and he reported that since the judge dismissed the first case, that it would make it very difficult and obscure for Alvin Bragg to then bring a second attempt at a charge of that manslaughter charge against Daniel Penny in that New York case in the death of Neely, who was having a psychotic episode with making threats on a subway car. And Daniel Penny stepped in to ensure that the people in that subway car were safe. It resulted in the death of Neely. And today, That jury in New York, a jury of Penny's peers, has said that he is not guilty of criminal negligence. You can't look at anything going out of that district with Alvin Bragg being in charge there. There's nothing that you're going to approach there and see that is, you know, that you can't automatically predict the next thing that's going to happen, because nothing that this man does is obvious. He is willing to go against the grain at any given time, incredibly politically motivated there in Manhattan and also in the state. When you have an attorney general and a district attorney who campaign on the idea of getting Donald Trump, you know that they are most definitely interested in the idea of politics being the most at play. You have to make sure that you follow this case all the way through to the end and understand very, very quickly that politics is a major factor in what is going to take place going forward with this case and also the Trump ones. There's a portion, I don't have the clip here. I'm going to get it for you a little bit later. We'll probably talk a little bit more about this interview, of that Kristen Welker conversation where she asks Donald Trump, would you accept a pardon from Joe Biden? And he says, what would I be pardoned for? I haven't done anything wrong. And I think it's an interesting conversation to entertain right now. If you think about Donald Trump being like, oh, yeah, I'd take a pardon, that'd be real helpful. First and foremost, the cases that he has been found guilty in, not yet sentenced, so not yet a convicted felon in that right. Just a reminder for the folks in the back, not a convicted felon yet because he has not faced sentencing in the conclusion of that court case. Those are state charges. Joe Biden can't offer him a pardon for those things that he has been found guilty of. On a federal level, Jack Smith is folded up shop and he's on his way. He's out of there. There isn't really anything, in my opinion, that Joe Biden can pardon Donald Trump for that would be actually helpful to Donald Trump. And if you're going to accept, people continue to say this, if you're going to accept a pardon, there's an admission of guilt there that you need to be pardoned from something. In the same vein, we hear a lot of Democrats suggesting that we should see Joe Biden give like large blanket pardons to people like Liz Cheney and the people on the select committee that went after Donald Trump, didn't materialize into anything, and then deleted a bunch of evidence in their investigations into Donald Trump. So you're going to hear, this is going to be interesting. This is your talking point for your holiday. Don't do this at holiday parties. If this stuff comes up and someone's trying to back you in the corner, you can't have it both ways. You can't have people talking about maybe the unifying nature of Joe Biden offering Donald Trump some kind of pardon, but then they want to get you to the point where you're like, well, yeah, that would be nice. That would be something moving forward. And then they quickly go, but that would mean that Donald Trump would have to admit guilt, because they're just trying to get you to admit that you think Donald Trump did something that he should feel guilty for and be pardoned for. You can't live in that world and the world where Joe Biden offers blanket pardons to people like Liz Cheney and the like for whatever it is they were involved in, and not also suggest that should they get those pardons and accept those pardons, that they too are not guilty for something and feeling as such. It'll be very important to watch the justice system continue to fold in the way that they have been, with Jack Smith saying there's nothing left to do here, watching as we see Kash Patel move closer and closer towards the FBI director position, when we see Pam Bondi go in as the attorney general, where their focus is. Donald Trump has said consistently from the campaign trail and then also again in his first interview with Kristen Welker here this weekend on Meet the Press, Donald Trump has consistently said, my success will be my retribution. And people are like, oh, he said retribution. But it's not what he's not saying. He's going to send an army of people to the doorsteps of anybody who is his political enemy. He knows I don't think that he's doing this in a biblical way. But the Bible talks about heaping burning coals on the heads of those who oppress you, because it's the worst thing ever to sit there and watch a positive way forward, a measure of success, something that isn't fighting fire with fire. If the left is to sit by and watch Donald Trump do the things that he said he would do to get elected, and the American people love it because it's what's best for the country, There's nothing worse for those people who have been his opposition for this long. There's going to be nothing worse than to watch Donald Trump be the most successful for the people who did not want him there the most. And the reason why is because if you're sitting at home and you are somebody who is on the fence, if you're sitting at home and you are not a Trump person, you believe in fiscal conservatism, you think that Donald Trump is kind of a pompous butthead, and you are not interested in contributing to more of the MAGA culture that you hate. If you're one of those individuals, but you decided, you know what, this Kamala Harris direction is an absolute nightmare for the country, I'm going to vote for Donald Trump. You're somebody who is probably in play the next election around for people who are going to watch Donald Trump go do the things that they think that Donald Trump does. And if he's successful, if you were one of those people who was in the middle and you threw your support behind Donald Trump, or maybe you just didn't support his opponent in this last election, if Donald Trump is successful, then he likely has won you over with his actions. They cannot compete with that. The worst thing that can happen to these people who have been in direct opposition to Donald Trump, it's a lifestyle. It's what drives your everyday maneuvers. The worst thing that can happen to them is that Donald Trump does the things he says he was going to do and is successful at doing them. And that's what Donald Trump continues to say. We have a great show planned for you today. Al Robertson is going to be on with us next. He hosts the Unashamed podcast. You know the Robertson family from Duck Dynasty. And I did an event with Al and his wonderful wife maybe about a year and a half ago. And it was a pro-life event with the Vitae Foundation. And it was wonderful to listen to Al, who is a pastor, talk about these issues that often get discussed in political climates. You know, there's a much bigger thing than politics. There's culture. There's how you live your life. There's your ability to live your life on your own without some sort of oppressive government coming in and telling you what you're going to do, when you're going to do it, and how you're going to do it. The discussion doesn't stop because the campaign is over, because the election is over. Really, this discussion should be what really, really drives the next one. So Al Robertson is going to be on with us next. He's going to join us on video. So join us on the Annie Fry YouTube channel. Our YouTube live chat poll for today is who should be deported? Kristen Welker asked him about some of this stuff, and Donald Trump did not give a hard line, toss everybody out on their tuchus. He didn't say that. Now the word DACA is back up. How old are the DACA people, you think?
Oh, gosh.
Aren't they our age? I always kind of thought that.
Yeah, I mean, that could be generations at this point.
Yes, for sure. I would imagine that the oldest DACA people might be in their 40s. Because they were supposed to be people who, at the time that Barack Obama was assembling this, were people who knew nothing but America, did not come here on their own fruition. They came here. They've put roots down here. This is their home. If you sent them back to some other country, that would be the most foreign thing to them. They don't know anything differently. So how many DACA? And at the time, my recollection, it was somewhere around 750,000 people to maybe 800,000 people. It was less than 1 million people that we were discussing. How many people is that now?
Ugh.
Millions, I would only imagine.
Yeah, I mean, if you're including, gosh, the last 4 years have changed that number completely.
The people who were put into the framework of qualifying for DACA status, I'm pretty certain had to be children when they came here. I mean, it was not something that, it was not a decision that they made to shirk the laws that were in place. And those people are all old enough to have multiples of children by now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you're born here, you're a citizen. So what happens with all of those individuals? I'll be curious to see how hardline the Annie Fry Show audience is on this question. Who should be deported? We have four options for you. Every illegal immigrant is the first one. The second one, and I had to figure out how to write this and limit it to like 35 characters that I get to put it in the YouTube poll. The first one is every illegal immigrant. The second one is criminals. Now, listen, I get it. If you broke the law to come here, you're a criminal. But I'm talking about in this second category, criminals other than illegal entry. So if you were a criminal before you came here, if you've committed any crime since you've been here, those type of people, maybe that's your category. The third one is more recent immigrants. And I thought about putting a time frame on it, But I'm pretty sure that if you think that people who have been here for a super long time are different than people who've come here in the last 4 years, in the last 14 years, whatever it might be, vote more recent immigrants and then leave us a comment as to what you define recent to be. Or the last option, got to put it in there, you don't think anyone should be deported. That's the YouTube live chat poll for today, and we'd love to hear what you think about it. Go to the Annie Fry YouTube channel and vote and leave your comments. We will feature some of them throughout the course of the show. Al Robertson's going to join us when we come back. He's the host of the Unashamed podcast, the oldest beardless bro. That's what his ex handle is, at Beardless Bro. He's going to be with us. We're going to talk to him. We're going to have him join us there on the video. And we're going to talk to him about probably the most important conversation, which is how does culture affect politics, and what is our roles? Yes, we're voters, but we're also people of faith. We're parents. We're children. There's a lot of culture. There's a lot of faith. It's the most important conversation, and we'll have it with Al Robertson in just a few minutes. Don't go away.
Always been my favorite time of the year. It's a season that we get to celebrate the birth of our Lord. This year, I'm excited to share that I've partnered with this amazing prayer, meditation, and music app called Hallow on their 25-day prayer challenge leading up to Christmas called Advent Pray 25. Join me and millions of other Christians around the world as we celebrate together the truth that God so loved the world that he gave us his only son. Download Hallow and join me in praying every day. God bless.
So there you have Gwen Stefani of No Doubt fame. I grew up with her. And she's talking about being a Christian openly. She's talking about the idea of praying and spending time focusing on Christmas as something that has to do with Jesus. And I got to say, yes, it's an advertisement for Hallow, but she's out there professing it. Is there something going on post-election where people are maybe just a little more comfortable now to say, yeah, I publicly identify as a Christian and I pray and I love Jesus and Jesus loves me? Let's get to our next guest. Al Robertson is back on the show with us. We haven't talked to him in a while. He's the host of the Unashamed podcast. You know him of the Duck Dynasty family. Al, welcome back to the show. It's so great to have you here. Okay, Al, can you hear us? Okay, we are having some technical difficulty today. There you go.
We are. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. Thank you very much.
Awesome. Thank you for having me back.
Of course. You know, you and I have shared a stage talking about our pro-life viewpoints and advocating for people to support the pro-life cause, but oftentimes that gets lumped into a political conversation. When really, I wonder if you agree with me, the cultural conversation is so much bigger and broader than what the political conversation brings to the table.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. It's, you know, and at one time, even on the political side, it was just, it made sense that, you know, what was the legal, safe, and rare, you know, used to be the idea behind it. And even then, at a common sense level, people understood this is, we're talking about a woman in trouble. We're talking about probably a lot of relationship issues. We're talking about the life of a child. I mean, all those things would have mattered just in the sense of being a human being. And then it became so politicized that all the names got changed, all the descriptions got changed, and then all of a sudden you're not even talking about real people anymore. We still are. I mean, you know, we're still concerned about that mom, that baby, that young man that's involved in the process as well. So I just wish we could, and it seems like we're kind of getting back maybe to a more common sense time where we can just talk about human issues to human beings in a human way.
Yeah, it's an important conversation to have. I think a lot of people have been kind of spooked out of being willing to advocate for what we see on the mainstream. And I very much so believe, and you travel the country having these types of conversations, that the loudest voice out there isn't necessarily the most prominent with the largest majority of people who have some pretty common sense thoughts about religion, people who identify themselves as being Christian. You know, a lot of that pours into your thoughts in politics. Do you feel like there is a little bit of a movement to just not be like Bible thumping over it, is the way a lot of people might look at it, but just more open with it in conversation?
Yeah, and I think part of what you're seeing with the whole, you know, Trump, you know, movement of people, because Trump is not even really a super religious person or, you know, a very spiritual discussion, you know, coming out of his, all the things he talks about. And yet, just because of his common sense approach to people and the country, he's really, I think, opened more doors for us on the faith side than probably anyone else in my lifetime. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just you're talking about religious freedom, religious liberty, but also just being able to talk about this in the public square where it makes sense, especially. I mean, because even people that may not agree with you politically still have, we all have the same wants, needs, and desires, and we want people to succeed. And the faith community has a major voice in that. And so I think you're starting to see that allowed more. We kind of went to this place where it was like, that has to be removed. That has to be put in your church, your synagogue, or whatever. And now we're saying, no, these are common sense things that really speak well in an open, commonplace situation. And so I think you're starting to see that more, just like in this last election, Trump was able to have his supporters say, I'm a Trump supporter, without just being vilified. I mean, it's like, okay, you support the guy.
Yeah, something has changed. We're speaking with Al Robertson. He is of the Duck Dynasty family, of course, and you can listen to him on his Unashamed podcast. You know, Al, I think that Duck Dynasty definitely tapped in a little bit ahead of the curve into something that was always strong in this country, maybe quieted on the trendy culture front. But I remember the first time I watched an episode of Duck Dynasty, and at the end, there was a prayer. And I'm a Christian Bible. I was raised that way, so I've known it my whole life. But I was shocked that at the end of the prayer, it was just a very honest prayer. There was no gimmick yep. to it. There was no like, okay, now I see why they put that in there. Do you feel like that you guys were able to tap into something early with the success of Duck Dynasty because you were true to some of those roots?
No doubt. And it really fit, you know, because we were sort of, if you think about it, looking back, this was like 2011, 2012. And so we were kind of the leading edge of what then became this cultural divide over everything, whether it's politics, religion, you know, abortion, anything you wanted to throw in there. We were some of the early attempts to cancel, you know, was us. And then it became real prominent. Now you're starting to see that ebb back. And so I think what people noticed when we first began was our authenticity. This is really who we were. And in fact, that prayer came about. It's not like somebody planned it and, you know, it was in a writer's room. It came about because we were sitting around a table and doing the pilot, and the director says, okay, I'm not sure how this is going to go, but here are some ideas. And Dad just raises his hand and says, Mr. Director, before we eat, we give some blessings and praise to the Almighty about what we've received. Why don't we do that? And the guy's like, okay. But it was because that's who we were. And so I think that's what rings true. I think when you're authentic, and when you really do live this way, people respect that. And I think a lot of people were being ignored. There were people all across America that were praying before their meals and said, finally, you know, people gathering around a table can give praise to the Almighty. So I think that was the reason it resonated. And it really just kind of it secured our place as a cultural phenomenon at the time.
It sure did. And it was a part of I've gone back and watched episodes with my children who weren't even there in 2012. They're like, can we watch that show about the ducks? And then she associates with, as Christians, like she sees that, she understands that it's meaningful to her, and she's 8 years old. You mentioned your father, and I've watched just recently your brother Willie sat down with Tucker Carlson. That was a really compelling conversation. But, you know, once again, telling the story, as nobody has shied away from, your family's written books about it, about your pathway to being in the Christian faith, your ministry, yourself, you know, the life that you walk to be a Christian. I hear so many people, especially in the election, would talk about Donald Trump, be like, he's not a good Christian. And I'm always like, can we first define, it's more important to me that we talk about what good Christians are, especially if we're talking about it in a secular sense.
Exactly.
The pathway to being a Christian and to being able to share that faith, there's not one way, there's many ways. Your family is certainly an example of that.
Well, and especially Dad. I mean, you mentioned, I mean, you know, we did a movie called The Blind. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when Dad was at first, he was like, oh, I'm not sure about this. I mean, we're going to put on a movie screen the absolute worst period of my life. And I said, we're going to, Dad. You're right. I said, but just think about how that relates to just everybody who's out there, who's really just trying to struggle, you know, in a struggle to make their way. And this shows an opportunity. People see you now as this, like, iconic figure and, you know, this person of faith. But at one time, He was not that way at all. He was just a guy struggling with addiction, with a family, with trying to figure out how to make it all work. And so that's Christianity in a nutshell. That's any of us. And that's why you can't look and say, well, you know, we expect our president to be, you know, Billy Graham. It's just you're not going to be, these are just people. And they're people who have a, you know, deal for politics or deal for something else. But what we're trying to do is have a better influence to have a better life. Mm. And so that's what I'm looking for more than anything else. And look, allow us to be able to share Jesus with other people. You can take it or leave it. It's up to you. It's always a choice. But it's a choice lifestyle that we've lived ever since my dad became a Christian. Now, of course, this last week, you know, we publicly talked about that he has early stage Alzheimer's. And so it reminds me of Reagan, you know, when you kind of get to that point where you have to step off the public stage. But he's had such an impact not on our family, but everybody else. Now we're all living legacies of what he's done in us. And so that gives us an opportunity to continue that on. And so we're not devastated by that. I read a lot of headlines this week, devastation in the Duck Dynasty family. We're not devastated. We have lived our life for the moment of when we cross over. And so that's what we do, and that's how we impact people.
That's such a powerful statement. We're speaking with Al Robertson of the Duck Dynasty family, his Unashamed podcast you should absolutely subscribe to. I consider your family, the Robertson family, to be one of the most iconic American families, you know, currently in the public eye, certainly. But I think that the impact that you're going to have on culture is going to be studied and talked about for years to come in your father, certainly with that news coming out. It's always sad to hear that. It's something that a lot of people can relate to during a holiday season right now, getting back together with family and friends. When I think about the struggles that your dad has gone through that he's publicly talked about that are in that movie, The Blind, it's not difficult to compare the many stories that are in the Bible of people who struggled, who were not anywhere close to, you know, a respectful, God-fearing life that came into it. I mean, the Bible is full of those characters, and it is out there for anybody who is looking to have some sort of relationship like that. And I think your family, on a global level, has really exemplified that message.
Yeah, you're so right. And that's one thing, you know, I've been a pastor most of my life. And so obviously I've studied the Bible. I've preached and taught a lot from it. And you're right. All the heroes of the Bible were villains at some point, you know, in their own circumstances, in their own culture. And they came to an awakening of something better and something different. And so the only one that was Jesus. And so that's the beauty of it, that we've lived our life for that. We were just duck call, you know, guys with beards down in Louisiana, just kind of doing our own thing. We never planned on becoming anything of a cultural discussion. But, you know, that's what God does. He takes that which people look at and say, you know, I don't know these people and see anything redeeming about them. And all of a sudden you get to know them. You think, well, maybe there is something to that. And you see that consistently around our country. And so I love American stories. Especially ones where they understand who God is as well.
Final question before we let you go, and we're very grateful for your time today. We're speaking with Al Robertson. I don't know that I've heard about it as much here in the last week or two, but right after the election, leading into Thanksgiving, politically speaking, from the left, a lot of people saying if your family doesn't support the right candidate, you shut them out. You cut them off completely. What's your advice to those people who want to not have to do that? If they politically disagree, maybe they're on the Trump side, maybe they're not. How do you encourage families to interact with each other during this holiday season after a very contentious election?
Look, there's so much that can divide us and so much that does. And certainly we're all Americans. We have the beauty of this kind of experiment in human history is that we have the freedom to be able to disagree with people. But at the end of the day, you have to find a place of unity. And I can't think of a better place than in your own family. To come together for the holiday season, whether it's a Thanksgiving or Christmas, and whether you're a believer or not a believer, I mean, family is all you have while you're here on this earth. And so, you know, look, you don't have to talk about, you know, who you voted for. You don't have to talk about every political thing in a setting like that. Talk about the things you do agree with. I mean, the beauty of what we have in Christ is we have peace. And that peace comes from being able to disagree and yet still treat people respectfully. So that's what I would do. I hate the idea of cutting people off. I have people in my family that are left and most of us are right. But you know what? We love them. Yeah. And we don't have to get into politics with that person or that cousin. We just find some other great things to talk about and realize we're still connected because of family.
Oh, amen to that. Al Robertson, thank you for the time today. Sorry about that technical difficulty at the beginning of our conversation.
No problem,
but we love having you. We look forward to having you back again soon. Thank you.
Thank you. Keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you so much. You as well. Bye-bye. Al Robertson, host of the Unashamed podcast, Duck Dynasty. I believe he's the oldest brother, and he's the beardless bro. Wasn't featured as much on the show, but did make appearances from time to time. I was able to do an event with him, as I said a little bit earlier in this conversation, with Al and his wife, Lisa Robertson. A great, great message on the pro-life cause, and really grateful that he is willing to come back on the show with us and have that discussion. So, Al Robertson from Duck Dynasty on the Annie Fry Show today. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, Wiggins America, you're going to hit us with those Monday roundup shows that are stories that maybe we might have missed over the weekend. There was still, I think this is just going to be the case, Ryan, that there's no days where no news is going to happen for a while.
No. No, this was actually kind of a wacky weekend.
Yes.
A lot of the weird stories.
All right. Well, we'll get to them when we come back with Ryan Wiggins and Wiggins America next. That place, call me an amenity.
Wiggins!
Oh! Monday Roundup!
This here's the wildest ride in the wilderness!
This is the wildest ride in the wilderness. It's been a crazy weekend, as evidenced by these stories that I'm about to dish to you. This is some goofy, goofy stuff. First of all, does everybody remember Ray Gun from the Olympics, the dancer? 37-year-old dancer's routine consisted of moves including...
Ray Gun was... Isn't that like her last name or a version of her last name?
It was... I think her first name was... Oh, was it Rachel?
Oh, Rachel Gunnarsson or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, but it's a combination.
Yeah.
And so she has like this stage name.
So it's supposed to be like Ray Gun.
Yeah.
Wiki Wiki, you know?
Yes.
That's why guys... Ethan is here to keep us young.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm doing here.
Wiki Wiki.
Call of Duty released a new game, and one of the emotes that you can do in the game is the Ray Gun dance.
Does she get something for that?
I would think if she gets something for that,
good for her.
If it's called the Ray Gun dance,
I don't know if that's what they call it or if they call it like breaking or whatever. But like, when they show it side by side, I mean it's
that's
all.
That's not
the stuff.
What that's you awesome. Just did, Ethan. Is it?
What
did you just do? The Ray Gun?
No, I just.
I just did the Ethan.
I was just trying to keep you guys young.
Thank you. You're going to have to work a little harder, but keep going.
The younger demographic, like 18 to 25 tunes in, they go, oh, I heard Wiki Wiki. That means this show's cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Hip and radical. Rad.
Exactly.
Rad.
It's very rad. They're on their skateboards.
What a dumb word.
They're like, hey, Tony Hawk. You know, they're saying things like that.
Yeah.
They're also
just saying words that are associated with things that might have been cool once.
When we were young. Yeah. So she did the kangaroo hop. She did
Tony
the backwards
Hawk is
roll.
Doing like arthritis commercials now.
I know, isn't that crazy?
Is it arthritis?
I don't know, but it's stuff that's like
something that's
hey,
a baby.
Have you taken
yeah,
your
stuff
Metamucil?
That shows your age.
Like, oh no,
he's like skating in, but he's got his walker. It's no thing. Go on.
So if you loved Ray Gun and the.
I wouldn't phrase it that way.
Viral Olympic breakdancing that she did, then you might be interested in seeing Ray Gun the Musical, an Australian show that was set to debut this weekend. Problem is, Ray Gun herself had nothing to do with this show and has now sued the creators of Ray Gun the Musical. So we don't know if we'll ever actually get to see Ray Gun the Musical.
So I don't understand how these things work. Does she own the dance?
It's questionable because they're using her name and it's spelled weird too. So it's not like you could say, well, I'm just saying Reagan.
Yeah.
It's R-A-Y-G-U-N, all one word. So she's gotten her lawyers involved, and I don't know if she wants a piece of the action or if she's just saying, no, I'm embarrassed,
she
don't do
this.
She
needs to let that stuff... It's not like the meme is ever going to go away. If she can make a penny off of it, she should make the penny off of it.
I would think so.
The crazy thing is that, and she's really pushed back against embracing this, is that even after the Olympics, there's some sort of world breakdancing committee out there. They put her as the number one breakdancer in the world. After this. So, like, it's not... I think that she's... In her mind, she's probably like, I'm fighting for my career and to go down and be great. And it's like... No,
I want to test a theory here.
Don't do that.
Based on what Ethan is saying about the people listing her as the number one breakdancing person in the world, mm-hmm. What the heck is even that? Let's start making lists. of the most this, the worst that, the best ever, such and such, and see if we can just become featured places.
Yeah.
Come up with some sort of organization outside of our name.
It's kind
of
like Ripley's Believe It or Not.
Yeah,
almost.
Like who gets to determine who the best breakdancers are and in what stance? I mean, I right. understand breakdancing is not something that I can do. It takes skill. It takes talent.
Does
but
it?
Like,
I mean, Reagan proved us wrong, I think.
Well, maybe.
She didn't win, though.
But the point...
No, she didn't. She got eliminated, like, in the first round.
But, I mean, the point being, somebody out there made a list and said she was the best, and we are talking about it.
Uh-huh.
We should do that, but in reverse.
Okay.
Let's just make up
like
some bullcrap.
The Annie Fry Show podcast is the number one and number two most intense podcast in the entire world.
Factually speaking.
Factual speak, yeah. I mean, like the experts
source,
have spoken.
It's all objective.
Ryan Wiggins.
Source Ethan.
Wiggins America.
Yeah.
Source Ethan after Ryan's the one that yeah. just said it.
Yeah. Right, right. So
multiple reports.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, gosh, everybody's saying it. I'm going to try to play the whip here. We've had some technical difficulties, so we'll see if it turns on.
I just don't think it was that good of the story. I think the system is revolting. Oh, see, it was even quiet.
Yeah.
It was like, fine, I'll go.
Yeah, they said, oh, you're intense, huh?
Felt obligated.
You guys should all continue to listen into the show today because this is our first day on the air.
Yeah.
Gosh.
This is our first broadcast ever.
Here's that quiet whip again.
I was not expecting that.
Telegraph the delivery. Everybody knows the joke's coming. All right, next one is comparing delivery apps. So question, does anybody use food delivery apps in the room?
No, I'm opposed to it. I hate them. They cost way too much money.
They do cost a lot of money. Have you ever used them?
Yes.
No.
You
Once.
Have?
Once.
Me
I've
too.
Like had
Once.
Pizza delivered from the pizza store.
Wow, the pizza store.
Yep.
See, I use the like
what would
the,
you call it?
The Pizza Hut app.
Pizza delivery restaurant.
Shut up. The PDR.
Yeah, that's PDR. Standard PDR.
Everybody knows.
Standard.
Top 10 PDRs.
Top 10 PDRs.
Multiple one, source reports.
Papa John's. All right, so if you have used delivery apps, you are not in this room, and you are costing yourself a lot of money. There was a study recently that showed the difference between delivery apps and gave you the ranking of which ones you should use if you're trying to save the most money. Problem is, the one that saves you the most money still has a markup of almost 70%
no.
on your meal.
I'm never that hungry for anything ever.
Yeah.
I'd rather starve.
Uber Eats is the lowest markup at 69%. The next one up is Grubhub and DoorDash, and they're at about 80%.
So they're saying that if you order $10 worth of food, which is like not even a full meal anymore if you're getting something from someone, if you were to order a $10 order, that you're paying $17 to get it delivered to you?
Yes, on average. But
on average,
it can be more than that.
Is that include like... the delivery, because there's like delivery fees and travel charges. And
they're including everything.
Okay.
Total cost of if you were to drive through and get the thing yourself or whether they were to bring it to you.
I could see a situation, a scenario in my life where before I had kids and if I was like, I used to work double shifts at the sports talk radio station in order, because I made no money and I needed money. So I would work my normal day shift and then I would stay and I would board up Illinois football, Illinois basketball, those types of things. If I were there the whole time and I was not able to leave the board, that I would pay to have food delivered to me as my only meal that day. But that kind of money, like a $17 meal, would be like 3 hours of work. At
oh,
the,
yeah.
It'd be like, what should I do? Eat dinner? Or work the shift.
Or
and when, you, and when you're making that little or we are making hourly wages, you think of everything in those terms.
Yes.
How many hours is it going to take to pay off when I take
the bus
today? I was making
$7 an hour in 2006 when I first started getting paid. It was like $7, maybe $7.50. Whatever it was, Illinois minimum wage was higher than what I was being paid. And this is not a knock on that radio gig at all. That's the way it was.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you got paid. And minimum wage in Illinois was higher, so I could have gone and worked at the local gas station and probably made $10 an hour or more at the local gas station. But the radio stations that I needed to invest my time in for a career were in Webster Grove. So I was driving 55 minutes to go make less money than I ever possibly could. And you then begin to calculate everything in like $7.50.
Yeah, exactly.
But look at you now.
Well, I'm not. That's not even a joke.
Nope.
I mean, that's for real. And I encourage people to understand what you're investing your time in, that your time is sometimes valuable in the sacrifice. You're probably thinking that's what you're doing
right
here.
I'm saying
that's what you're doing.
You have your own show. You get to work with Ryan Wiggins.
I was sloughing in on the Andy Fry show when I was a kid, and look at me now, broadcaster for the St. Louis Cardinals.
Easy, easy.
For real. It's real. It's not a joke.
Everyone has a dream.
Only we could broadcast together.
Last one before we get to the top of the hour is professional back scratchers are a real thing.
Like and people?
Yes. And they
Ew.
Travel around to probably very rich people, and they
just
do...
put his hand in the air like he's one of them.
Oh, really? Is that
Did
what
you
were
see
saying?
That?
That's exactly
Did
what
you
yeah.
see that?
Doing...
He was. You said professional back scratchers are a real thing, and he went like this.
Oh, I thought he said it after I said rich people.
No, I thought he was meaning like he only believes in using his index finger to scratch people.
What I was doing was telling you we had 1 minute left, if you guys want to pay me...
Don't talk about that. That has nothing to do with it.
If you want to pay me to scratch your back, I'll do it.
Okay.
$20 is $20.
Ryan's like...
Not
this whole time?
Just clear. Just I want to point out, the whole article says, like, every other paragraph, it goes, keep in mind, not sexual. Like, over and over and over.
Yeah.
It
How
keeps
many times,
reminding you.
I think on the second time, on the second yeah. time you're saying that, you realize everybody thinks it's
everybody
sexual.
Everybody thinks this is, that's what this is. Apparently it's not. And man, I tell you what, I wouldn't mind having me a nice back scratch every now and then.
But nothing sexual.
Nothing sexual about it, though.
Nothing what?
There's Saskatchewan. Saskatchewan. Saskatchewan.
Steve Moore, Congressman Bost, amazingly. Next. Don't go away.